Good afternoon, my name is Ewout, and I will be talking today a little bit about biclustering, more specifically biclustering of binary data. So I'll be talking a little bit about what's biclustering, it's a very small introduction. Then I'll be talking about what the BBIT algorithm actually is, and I will also then be talking about the BBIT workflow that we're using right now. So, introduction. Biclustering is actually very simple. It's you're trying to cluster the rows and the columns of your data simultaneously. You're trying to find these local patterns, in your data, like these rectangles. And for binary data, it's even more easy because you're really just trying to find rectangles of ones in your 0-1 data sets. The applications are, for example, you can use it in fingerprint data, you can use it in target prediction data, patient data, so long as it's binary 0-1. So probably the most well-known algorithm is the BiMax algorithm for binary biclustering. It's a recursive divide and conquer algorithm, meaning that it will try to swap the rows and the columns a bit in order to try to find these rectangles of ones in your data. However, it does have the tendency to find biclusters which have a really small column size. And for that, there was something called the repeated BiMax, in which BiMax was repeated to grow the rows and the columns of these biclusters. One of the downsides, though, or I guess it depends a little bit on your research question, is that the resulting biclusters from this repeated BiMax could not have overlapping rows. So that's why we went to another algorithm, which is called the BBIT algorithm, from a paper in 2011. And the really nice thing is that it's also really fast because it will actually interpret these 0-1 data as bits and then transform them to bit words. So it will see like 16 0-1 data points, and it will see it as one bit word and use that information to do all the comparisons in order to try and find these biclusters in your data. The algorithm can also find overlapping biclusters, just like BiMax, and it will always find the same biclusters. It's not C-dependent, because it's an algorithm that starts from every row pair, and it's also not influenced by swapping the rows and columns in your data, which can be the case in BiMax, because that algorithm will try to switch the rows and the columns in order to try and find these biclusters. So the downside is that you're finding a lot of biclusters, which is also a downside, but you're not really finding the maximal biclusters because you're also still starting from all the pairs of rows, and starting from those seeds, you're trying to find the biclusters. So the authors of this paper originally implemented in Java, so we made a very small wrapper in the BBIT-R package to be able to call the original algorithm in order to find these biclusters. What this function will output is the biclust result object, which is also from the biclust package, and also the format in which many other biclustering packages are outputting their biclusters. So the way the BBIT algorithm works is as following. So it will first encode all the 0-1 data to these bit words, and then it will start the algorithm from all the row pairs. So it's actually very easy. Let's say, for example, we start from the first two rows, and then we're just going to see where do these rows both have ones. So, for example, in this case, it's column 1, 5, and 6. And then in the second step, we're just going to see what other rows are fitting this column pattern of column 1, 5, and 6, and we'll add those to the bicluster. And that's the bicluster you'll get. As I said before, it's not finding all of the biclusters. For example, one case where it will not find all of the biclusters is in this little small data set example. So you can see it will find the red and the blue biclusters, but the green and the blue ones, but the red bicluster circled here, it will not find. Because if you would compare row 1 and 2, row 1 and 3, and row 2 and row 3, they will always have something more in common than just the first and the last column. So the red bicluster will never come out of this algorithm. So a possible solution for this is to also start allowing noise in your biclusters, not just looking for biclusters with only ones, but also allow zeros in there. And that actually, when we had some collaboration project with other researchers, that was actually what they were also interested in. They didn't only want to find perfect biclusters. They wanted to, for example, see we have symptoms and we have patients that fitting this group of symptoms, but we should allow a little bit of leeway, a little bit of noise that should be allowed. We want to see which patients are fitting the general trend of this pattern. So that's also a very good argument to start allowing these zeros in your biclusters. So, and the way we do that with the BBIT algorithm, well, we just continue. We don't stop there with the perfect rows which fit it perfectly. we also continue with adding the rows which do not fit it perfectly. So in this case, we add row 3 and 6, and we see that there's 1, 0 allowed. And then that would be our final by cluster. So this small adaptation is also included in BBDAR package, like in the same way. You give like the minimum number of rows you want for a by cluster, the minimum number of columns, and the noise. You can either allow an integer amount of zeros, or you can say a percentage, like if you have a by cluster of 10 columns, and if you say allow 20%, two zeros are allowed. So and what it will return to you is a by cluster in which two rows, the starting pair are all ones, and all the other rows can contain zeros. However, it does bring with it a little bit of more increased computation time, but even more importantly, you will get a very large increased number of resulting by clusters. You'll find a lot. So then the question is, how can we interpret this large amount of by clusters? Is there a way we can decrease this number of by clusters? And that's basically what the final part of this talk will be about, a workflow with the BBeat in order to try and find these noisy by clusters with 0-1 data, but also reduce the amount of bi-clusters that you're finding. So, and the data set that we started from a certain project was a symptom data set. And what we had here was 5,000 patients and 24 symptoms and conditions in this data set. And the goal that was asked to us is, can you discover indeed these noisy bi-clusters? Can you discover large patterns over the columns to which a good amount of patients are fitting, like either perfectly or with a little bit of noise. Because what they wanted to use these bi-clusters that we found to be able to use it as a classifier in their prediction pipeline. So they wanted to find these local substructures in your data, seeing which patients are fitting these patterns and use that in their prediction pipeline. So, and this workflow that we're using is actually really simple. We just start from the normal BBeat algorithm, like without noise, we just start from perfect bi-clusters. So let's say that this is our group of bi-clusters that we found with the algorithm. Then we're going to collect all of the column patterns, so not the rows yet, just the column patterns, because these are column patterns based on local structures in your data set. The rows of the bi-clusters we will add in a later stage. So once we have all of these patterns, we're going to do computer similarity between them, see which of these patterns are very, very similar, and then just do hierarchical clustering and produce a tree, for example. After that, we just simply cut the dendrogram at a certain point, either just based on the gap statistic, or we base it on the row coverage. And I'll show an example of that later, what I mean with row coverage. It's like the number of unique rows in the end you have covered with your bi-cluster. That's also something you can do in the package. So maybe a small explanation. The reason why we're actually doing this, like for example, and we checked it in some simulations, like if we simulate a bi-cluster and we're using this BBeat, we often find that we find a lot of bi-clusters which are almost or not completely discovering our simulated bi-cluster. We're finding like a bi-cluster which has like one or two extra rows or columns, so not always the same, but also not always the exact thing you want. So that was the reasoning behind, let's just see how similar these patterns are, and then after the hierarchical clustering, we just merge them together in merged patterns. So that's what we do here. We merge the patterns together based on the dendrogram, and then from each of these patterns, we're just going to start growing the rows which fit this pattern. So this could be the patients, for example, which fit the pattern of symptoms perfectly, or we can also start allowing noise. And that we do for each pattern. And in the end, we will get a much more reduced amount of bi-clusters based on this workflow. And in the very last step, we also check for are there any duplicate bi-clusters after this workflow. And also, we also delete the non-maximal bi-clusters, meaning if there's a bi-cluster which is completely contained within another bi-cluster, we just throw it away because that's not of interest anymore. And this workflow is also included in the package, and it's really simple. You just use the BBeat workflow package. You give the two parameters for which you want the original BBeat algorithm to start, and then you give the number, the noise percentage or the noise number you want for when you're starting to grow these noise in the final step. And you can also decide which clustering algorithm to use, which link you want to use. So for example, let's do this for the symptom data. What we do here is we start with the BBeat algorithm with minimum bi-cluster of 100 rows and 5 columns, and what we get is we get more than 900 bi-clusters. So that doesn't tell us that much. Like, where do we start looking? So then indeed we compute this Jacquard index of the column patterns, and we produce the tree. And then we need to make a decision. Are we going to choose 9 clusters, for example, in this tree, which was what the gap statistic was telling us, or shall we base it on the row coverage? And that's something you can also produce with the package. And it's the following plot. So on the x-axis, you have the number of clusters you would choose in the tree, and on the y-axis, the unique number of rows you have in the final bi-clusters. So this would mean that if you're choosing more clusters from the tree, you're getting back smaller patterns, but also more rows which fit this pattern. If you choose less clusters on the tree, you get back larger patterns, but also, of course, less rows which fit these patterns. So it very much depends on your research question, and it's often very interesting to look at both of them. So that's what we'll do now. We'll look at when we choose 9 clusters and when we choose 10 clusters. So for example, let's say we choose 9 clusters. What we have in the end is a total of 6 final bi-clusters, which is after deleting the duplicate and non-maximal bi-clusters. So, and we can see that the resulting bi-clusters, they're fairly different, only apart from bi-cluster 1 to 4. They're a bit similar. And why are they similar? Well, we can actually plot it. Well, if you look at the similarity between the columns, which you can also do with the compare result Jacquard index function, we see that bi-cluster 1 to 4 have a very similar columns, which is to be expected because you see that both these four first bi-clusters are finding fairly large patterns. And these patterns include conditions and symptoms which are occurring in a lot of the patients. Now what if we choose for the other? What if we want more row coverage of our data? We want bi-clusters to which more patients are fitting. So let's choose 10 clusters. Well, you can also do it in the package. And in order to avoid that you have to do this bi-clustering algorithm again and the computation of the similarity matrix, you can feed it into the function so you don't have to do not have to compute it all over again. And what we then get in the end is a total number of 7 bi-clusters. So there's one extra bi-cluster we can see over here to which a lot of patients are fitting. And this is also a smaller pattern because we've chosen more clusters, so we're getting smaller patterns and more rows which fit it. And actually, in this bi-cluster, what we saw was that 2 of the conditions were involving people who had experienced a stroke or were suffering from liver cancer. And these are 2 condition symptoms that were not appearing in any of the other bi-clusters. So for my final example, I'm going to go for a completely different data set. I'm going to look at a little bit of tourism data. So this was a tourism data set from about 1,000 Australians. And they will ask a question about which activities they did in their last vacation. And there were 44 vacation activities. And so again, we will use this BBIT workflow. We will use 10% noise this time. And we'll also play around a little bit with the minimum row and column settings of the bi-clustering algorithm and also the number of clusters we choose. So for example, if we start from bi-clusters with 250 and 4 columns, we get around 300 bi-clusters. And what we see here, for example, we always find a pattern which people who really enjoy going to beach, swimming, doing the walks and visiting markets, visiting friends. But these are 2 patterns which are really, really similar. Like the only thing that's different between 2 of them is like they both like to go to the beach and swimming, but this group of people will go to the markets and will go to scenic walks. And this group of people, on the other hand, would rather go visit pubs and have some nice barbecue at the beach. The numbers here, for example, this means that with noise, with this 10% noise, to almost 300 people were doing these things. And if you would always only look at the people who are perfectly fitting this pattern, it's like 111, which is still more than 10% of the data set. Like another example that you could see is like people who really like to visiting the markets and also the scenic walks. And what you see here, the only difference between these 2 patterns, so there's a large overlap here, but these people will go to the gardens combined with scenic walks and markets. These people will go to have barbecues combined with markets and scenic walks, and these people go to the pubs. Another useful informative plot you can make with this is look at the noise of the columns, so not of the rows, but let's see which one of these activities in the bi-cluster are often absent in the pattern. So which one of these activities in the columns does have the 0 most of the times. So what we see here, for example, in the first pattern, is that beach and swimming, with the beach and swimming and scenic walks and markets, is that the number of visiting friends was absent the most in this pattern when you look at this bi-cluster, followed by actually the swimming activity. And if you go to this example, the one which was absent the most, like the one activity that was not included in the bike classes more often, was the ones visiting the gardens. Here it was going to the barbecues, and here it was visiting the pubs. So that was actually, those were those three activities which were different between these three patterns. But if we now like choose a little bit more clusters, like we want to look at smaller patterns, but more people will do it. So let's take 11 clusters, and what we then see, we see activities appearing like more related to visiting monuments and museums. For example, the people in Brussels would probably visit the Atponium or the National Art Museum here in Brussels. Or other smaller patterns we see start appearing is farms, visiting farms and markets, sightseeing. And again, if we would even go to smaller bike clusters, let's say we don't start from 4 columns, but we start from 2 columns, we get even more bike clusters, and we find even smaller patterns. Like now we find a very strong pattern of people combining the activities of going to gardens, visiting monuments and farms together. Like around more than 16% of people are doing this all the time. But of course, in all of these examples, you always saw that relaxing, eating, sightseeing, and shopping was always appearing. Because, of course, those are the activities everybody wants to do on their holiday. So they're not really that informative anymore. So what happens if we just delete these ones? Well, then we actually see appearing a couple of other activities which we didn't see before. For example, now we also see activities combined beach and wildlife. And of course, when I Googled Australia, beach and wildlife, this was the first picture I found. So. And other activities which were appearing was also industrial and monuments, for example, visiting mines or breweries together. And apparently a very large amount of people are renting charter boats and going on scenic walks. And then if we tweak the parameters again a little bit, and in comparison with the previous one, let's say that we go for even smaller bike clusters, like 150 rows, we see some other activities appearing, like we also see that people are combining beach, swimming, and fishing. And we see a very strong pattern of people who are very cultural, want to visit museums and monuments and walk around in the city. So for example, if you're part of this last group, there's actually a lot of big things you can do here in Brussels. For example, you could visit the Airplane Museum or the monument next to it, the Jubelpark, or you could visit the smallest monument of Belgium, which is Monnikenpis, or there's even a nice instruments museum which you can also visit here. And of course, there were some other patterns that were appearing as well. For example, also monument and museum combined with theater. Then the question remains, we haven't seen the other activities a lot, which were not appearing that often. So a continued analysis could be, well, let's remove even more variables and see the more rare activities and see which one of those rare activities are appearing together in these bike clusters. So and with that, I've come to the end of the presentation. All of this was implemented in the BBITR package. There's also some extra stuff in there. For example, a pattern-guided BBIT or some more information about the rows for the Fisher-Exact test. And the main functionality of this workflow was also included in the Byteless GUI package, which is an R-Commander plugin for all different kinds of byte clustering algorithms. There was some extra stuff that did, like the simulations, like how good it was in finding overlapping byte clusters, and it was doing fairly well. And some future work that we're also thinking of was perhaps replacing the hierarchical clustering step with a network analysis and see how well that performs in combination with the workflow. And with that, I've come to the end of the presentation. Thank you for your attention.